the intro.
Hello. Hello. And welcome to Coffee with Cashy. I'm your host, Dr. Trevor Cashy. Today's lesson, I want to talk a little bit about cognitive reprocessing. Fancy words and terms and syllables here. This is a fancy term for taking your thoughts and turning them into other more useful thoughts, specifically in this case through expressive writing or journaling. Cognitive reprocessing, to be clear, happens many different ways. This is just one way that you can cause it to happen, right? Journaling is nearly age old. It is arguably as old as the cave paintings or other forms of written communication. This can be an important tool when it comes to stress cultivation, as in figuring out where your stress is coming from, stress attenuation, making your stress better, and preventing stress, keeping stress from coming about to begin with. And also stress moderation, as it were, to keep things within the realm of, really, within the realm of eustress rather than distress, that bad, ugly stuff, okay? Now, keeping a diary can be sort of a cathartic experience. It can get a lot of the feelings out and other things out on paper, as it were, on the screen, etc. It's a way to relieve stress. It is a short-term, causes a short-term increase in well-being, which is okay. That's okay. It's probably why diary keeping for a lot of people who do it is a daily or near daily activity. And what I want to do is teach you a way to write so that you get longer lasting, more legitimate benefits from it. Now, the daily increases in mood are tremendous. And I do condone those. Having something, a little something to do every day does make a big difference to help keep things moderate. However, if there's something a little bit bigger that's going on, this can help you make marked actual clinical improvements. So there are tons of cognitive restructuring benefits to this, again, changing the way that you think. Sometimes it does lead to extensive long-term changes. Dr. Penny Baker out here in Texas is at the cutting edge of writing as a form of emotion and stress management and cognitive restructuring, and is had come to some interesting conclusions over the last, I don't know, near 40 years he's done formal research on it. And this research is also validated many times in clinical and practical settings now across various areas of study. People at TCAN do it depending on the sort of person they are. And so I'm actually going to, you know, talk a little bit more about it because, you know, I think it's something that can benefit everybody. Penny Baker made one obvious discovery and one amazing discovery, okay? The obvious discovery is that the act of expressive writing made immediate and legitimate improvements to a person's emotional state, both males and females. The initial experiments were simple. Half the people wrote about benign stuff, right? Sports, clothes, weather, and so on. And the other half the people wrote about stuff that was bugging them, like to their core and their bones. And more specifically, the stuff they were keeping as secrets. Okay, stuff that they were only keeping to themselves. That's a big part of this. Even more specifically than that, there's the stuff that they were keeping as secrets to practically everybody. The people that wrote on purpose and no purpose had zero to negative results. Okay, a lot of them felt like they were irritated and wasted their time having done it, right? And the people that wrote on purpose and with purpose had, on average, substantial benefits after 10 or 15 minutes of writing. So long as they were actively working through an experience they had, rather than just wallowing in it, which is also the same as on purpose and no purpose, they made serious progress in their mood state, reprocessed their cognitions, and got a good amount of their rational thinking powers back so that they could act deliberately and help resolve what was happening. So Dr. Penny Baker then took it a step further. What if you did this with people that were sick? That were sick, had actual physical ailments. More specifically, people with chronic medical conditions. What happens then? Turns out people with chronic to severe asthma had improvements in their lung capacity measured by how much oxygen they move after just a few weeks. People with autoimmune disease, in this case, rheumatoid arthritis, had improvements in their symptoms. Even in HIV patients, some of their specific immune markers went up. I think their CD4 cells went up, okay? Immune cells. So Dr. Cashy has an idea of what's going on, and that would require a whole other series of videos. The short story is that when people hold on to their secrets or thoughts they only keep to themselves, they'll constantly judge themselves and will assume how other people will judge them if they express what they were thinking and feeling. Now, taking it one step further, this means that the act of inhibiting yourself, what you think, feel, say, and do, especially if because you have inferred the results of sharing those things as bad, it creates a threatening environment. And so now when you're around people that you assume will judge you in a certain way, and or your social status will change, your self-esteem will change, that you find it disturbing in some way to express those thoughts and feelings and do those things that you want to do, it actually excites your central nervous system, because now the environment has been interpreted as a threat to you, a threat to your person, and a threat to your status. See where I'm going with this? Okay. Now, the assumption of a poor outcome and assumed poor judgment from another person or group of people generates a biological stress response. You start releasing glucocorticoids. I think cortisol is the most famous one right now. And it causes an underlying cognitive appraisal of any social situation as potentially threatening, which means your stress response starts cranking. On the flip side, if a person tends to recognizes this and then starts to withdraw from social situations for that reason, well, then a person that withdraws from social environments because they feel social environments are now threatening and exhausting, they now start exhibiting depressive symptomology. So it's an equal opposite problem in that case. An interesting damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of situation. So this chronic stress response then starts deteriorating major organ systems. And the two organ systems that are most easily measured in terms of their excitation and deterioration are the immune system and the cardiovascular system, right? Your heart rate and your blood pressure are super easy to measure. And complete blood counts and things like that are easier to measure too. But really, the cardiovascular system is even something you can do at home. This is partly why Dr. Kashi theorizes that when people hold things in, they start to get stress, and then that stress causes them to get fat because they try to distract themselves from with distraction techniques like eating, staying up late, watching stuff, et cetera, and also get sicker on account of depressing their immune system from chronic elevations in glucocorticoids because of the stress response and because of the change in their lifestyle habits, different eating, different sleeping, drinking, smoking, et cetera, that also compounds the issues associated with the stress response causing your immune system to decline, okay? So it's because as soon as a person starts to keep something to themselves, and then they perceive their environment as threatening to them because they know they're holding this thing in, and if they let it out, other people will judge them poorly, that now it starts creating this circular logic of everywhere I go is a threat, and now my nervous system is primed all the time, okay? For instance, like they being rejected or chastised by telling something to somebody they want to tell, or they'd be afraid to say it. Again, it just automatically assumes 2, 3, 4 steps ahead that this environment is now a threat. The nervous system now gets tuned, and your body starts to deteriorate like it does when it's under the threat of pending doom, okay, all the time. It makes sense if you're running away from something for 10 or 15 seconds, when the stress response is cranking for 10 or 15 years while your organs start dissolving. So they feel stressed at the idea of saying it, and then they get stressed at the idea of bad things happening. So they hold it in and then start replaying these scenarios in their heads over and over and over, and creating stressful experiences in their minds that they think will happen internally, which when it happens, your body still responds the same way as if you think about it or if it's actually happening, more or less, especially when it comes to it being chronic all the time. The result is lots of anxiety, hostility, timidity, depression, et cetera, et cetera. And this writing process gives a person the ability to put their thoughts on paper, specifically the thoughts and memories giving them trouble, at which point they keep from everybody. And so when they put it out on paper, they get evidence, there's empirical data that supports that when they get their secret out, when they put what they're keeping in out into the world, that their life still goes on, everything is still okay, and their threatening environment is now far more agreeable to life, their central nervous system gets the go-ahead to chill the heck out. If you are only looking for something that will correct a current mood state, like make you feel better about something you know is short-term but's bugging you, well, then you can ask yourself, so here's a simple approach for something that is simple, right? You can ask yourself the 3 following questions. This takes about, 3 or 4 minutes. So when you're writing something down, it would be, well, name one surprising thing about today, right? You do at the end of the day if you realize you're kind of grumpy. What is one surprising thing about today? Name one thing that improved your mood, that moved you. Even if it's tiny, that's okay. Name one thing that improved your mood. Name one thing that moved you. Describe a single thing that inspired you, that essentially motivated you to be a little bit better. Name a single thing that inspired you. Even in the worst of times, something keeps you going. Something keeps you going, otherwise you'd walk out life's door, okay? So what was that thing? It takes 3 minutes to take it seriously, to do it, in a way that's meaningful. Totally worth it. Now, if you're looking something to work through, something more serious, and also start yourself on the path of cognitive reprocessing for something that does chronically bug you, well, like something that you keep in and it impacts your ability to think, feel, and act the way you want to act so that you can get more of what you want, right? If you start harboring tons of stuff, it distracts you and you end up doing less smart stuff and more dumb stuff. And when you do more dumb stuff, it causes you to think more dumb things about yourself, and right? Okay. So here are directions that Dr. Keshe got from Dr. Pennybaker himself, okay? There are, let me count the steps here. I have these notes out to make sure I do them justice. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six steps, simple steps, okay? So step one is to find a place where it is nice and quiet for you to concentrate and pick a time at the end of your workday or before you go to bed. And the next step is to promise yourself that you'll write for a minimum of 15 minutes a day for 3 or 4 consecutive days. Okay, so you're writing a little bit, you're writing for a little bit longer for a shorter period of time. So 15 minutes a day for at least 3 or 4 days. And then once you begin writing, write continuously. Spelling and grammar are for the birds, all right? If you run out of things to write, that's okay. Just repeat what you've already written. And you'll be surprised that even if you repeat what you write down a few times, you'll end up triggering new things and interesting insights that you have while you're writing. You can write on paper, or you can type on a computer. If writing or typing are too physically difficult, then you can also talk into a recording device. And this is immensely helpful when it comes to addressing and working through any distorted beliefs later. You can go back and listen to that and see how convicted you were with what you were saying. And then you can actually dispute it with yourself to actually now take a second step further to reprocess your cognitions in that way. When you go back and listen to it, then you can make a recording in response to that recording. You can write about the same thing on all 3 or 4 days of writing, or you can write about something different each day. It's entirely up to you. So long as you write stories about your conflicts, past difficulties, failures, or traumatic experiences, it will help get you on the road to improvement, and this will correct things enough so that you can start injecting more logic between stimulus and response and cultivate more constructive outcomes. So thank you so much for learning. Stay rational. Until next time. Want to continue having coffee with Dr. Keshe? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It is very much appreciated. Thank you, and see you next week. Dr. Keshe is out!